Welcome to Millwork Conversations presented by Google. Millwork Conversations is a monthly gathering point for Omaha's creators, innovators, artists, thought leaders, and activators with a focus on new ideas and what's possible. Let's chat.
Thank you, Natalie. Welcome, everybody. So good to see everybody here tonight. And I am thrilled for our guest today and for this month's Millwork Conversations, Bowie Reitschot. So, Bowie, good to see you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for carving out time, too. So let's jump in. There's so much that I want to talk about and through in the limited time we have. We were talking beforehand. It's so hard to get an impactful story, just all the amazing work that you've done into that short amount of time. But for those folks that don't know you, why don't you give a little bit of your backstory, kind of a little history of who you are, and then we'll dive into Aqua Africa and other community-related work that you're doing.
Yeah, that's great. First of all, I would like to say thank you for everybody showing up here. I was kind of I forced my wife and son to show up, so to see everybody else that's here, that's kind of great. And thank you, Jeff, and thank you, the Google and the Millwork Commons for putting this together. So I'm originally from South Sudan, and my mother is Ethiopian, and we came to the United States after South Sudan's civil war, and we came here as refugees to this country. So when we originally arrived in Minnesota and then transferred to Omaha, and then we've been in Omaha ever since, so.
Good. So Minnesota to Omaha. I think it was your TED Talk. You made a joke about kind of transitioning into better weather, right? How has that turned out so far?
Well, you warned me you only had 20 minutes to wrap it up.
So true.
I'm
true.
To make it
Good
as short
point.
As possible. But yeah, it was rough. I mean, when we originally came, so my father had a choice between Canada and the United States. Hmm. Obviously, we're not going to go to Canada. You know, it's cold.
Right.
So we went to Minnesota instead. So, and Minnesota was rough for our family, you know, like, I mean, the community was great. We got like our citizenship paperwork, like they fast tracked it and everything else, but we wanted a community of South Sudanese. So my father thought it was a good idea if we came to Omaha here. And, when we arrived in Omaha, it was 1998. So the worst winter storm that hit in a long time. So it was about a week of being trapped in the house because the snow was so much. So obviously my father doesn't make decisions in the house no more. So we've been here ever since though.
That's good. That's good. And you're still here.
Oh yeah.
Multiple winters. No, that's excellent. What everything you've done, your leadership, your energy, your drive, where do you think that comes from? Like what, and it might not be just one singular thing, right? It might be experiences, impact, family members, but if there's something that sticks out to you, what is that, right? In terms of where you got your drive to just lead and build and create things as a whole?
Well, I think in that case, like with anybody that's ever run an enterprise or most people that work in the nonprofit philanthropic space, that comes from passion. I think whatever you want to take on, you have to truly care about it. You really have to love it in order to have the nights where you're stressed out, you're waking up at 3 a.m. and you know you're missing family time. And I mean, it's just such a stressful experience. Without truly loving what you're doing, without truly believing that you're about to change people's lives, it's hard to do. So I feel like, the short answer is it's just passion for what you do.
That's good. That's good. Let's dive into Aqua Africa. Can you give kind of our attendees here and those listening to the podcast, you know, the backstory, kind of the origination, when it started? You know, I know it started here in Omaha, right, with a friend, but walk us through kind of that process or the path.
As you could tell, I'm still nervous while I'm up here. I know the technical guy back there told me to hold this as close to my mouth as possible. Gave me basic instructions I didn't follow yet, but thank you. So I'm kind of glad you brought up a topic that I'm really passionate about. So Aqua Africa, so our mission is to provide reliable access to clean water, sanitation, and power to rural communities in South Sudan. And the reason why we say reliable access is that we believe that when we go into a community and we construct an infrastructure, we try to have to, like, we invest additional resources to keep it going for over the years, even though it's going to cost us money. And the reason why we believe that is because we think if people have access to basic necessity for a long period of time, and then they start to adapt it, once they adapt it, it becomes sustainable. So that's our mission. As to how it really got started, as I said earlier, I myself, I'm South Sudanese, and you know, my brother's here, and my friends, childhood friends are here that are also South Sudanese. And if you ask any one of us what's the major challenge to our family when we were kids, was collecting and transporting water. And a lot of the times people hear the statistics, you walk 3 miles, it's very difficult to walk 3 miles and collect water, and then come back 3 miles. Yeah, it sucks walking 3 miles, but imagine coming back with 80 pounds of water, and you have to do that every single day. And that's your life. So especially if you're a woman, I mean, for me and my brothers, my mom unfortunately had 5 boys. So none of us were going to help her according to our culture, you know, transporting water. If we had 1 sister, that would have been her fate. So imagine missing school. Imagine missing any activities outside of doing chores every single day, like for the rest of your life. Then you get married. Then you do that for your husband. So to me, when I talk about any enterprise you do, any like philanthropic organization you run, the passion comes from memories of what you've gone through, what you've seen other people go through, and trying to make sure that it doesn't happen anymore. So really our passion, when you distill it down to its finer points, is that I don't want any other moms or women to go through the same thing my mother has to gone through.
That's strong. In the way that you tell that story, I think is relevant too, because it's time, right? And you've said this too, that's time that could be spent in school, right? Or playing football, or, you know, just life, enjoying life, right? And so, and I also like when I heard your TED Talk that you gave, it's this idea of like immediate change. The work you're doing, you see the results immediately, right? This doesn't take generations. This takes, frankly, hours, right? In some sense, maybe kind of talk us through that process, right? As you go into a community, right?
So, part of my challenge when I first did, when I first started raising money for Aqua Africa, I took it on as a project, right? We were gonna collect $60,000, and then we're gonna go back to South Sudan, and then we're gonna drill 3 wells. I honestly believe that would be the hardest part of my mission, or at like that project, is collecting the $60,000. I mean, points up to the people of Nebraska. I didn't have a hard time raising that money at all. I talked to 3 people, told them about Africa and why I'm doing here and all of that stuff. They gave me $60,000 to go do the project. At that moment, though, I landed in South Sudan. I was in South Sudan checking my passport. As I was checking my passport, some guy cut in front of the line and got his passport checked. Of course, the American side of me, I spent a long time telling people how I'm an African and my identity was tied into Africa. I saw that and my American side came out quick. So I was like, who the heck, my son is here, I shouldn't say that. Who the heck does that person think he is cutting in front of all of us? And then some guy nonchalantly explained to me that's the governor's son. He was embarrassed that I didn't know that. And to me, that was a shocker. Because at that point, I kind of realized I'm an African-American. I'm an American and I'm an African. I'm crossing 2 worlds. My identity has changed. That portion, when I was in South Sudan, that amplified to another level. So one of the bigger things that happened to me was we were drilling and the hydraulic brakes of the water the drilling truck. The hydraulic brakes, so we have to go back to the capital city. You can't run to the Ace Hardware and get a hydraulics thing. As we were coming back, the police officer, there was three police officers, and they said, a cow was hit, and we have reasons to believe you guys did it. And we're like, what's your belief in that? Well, you have a truck, a cow's dead. And we're like, whatever, where's the cow? So they're like, don't worry about the cow. You need to pay up. And honestly, I thought, like, this guy is wanting a bribe. And my American side of me isn't going to pay a bribe. So I was like, he's bluffing. He's not going to put me in jail. So I was like, I'm not paying. So he put me in jail with the driller. And it was 2 days I was in there. Like, I honestly wanted to give up. Because my father was always saying, you know, like, why would you insult God by going back? We're here. So you're doing great. And to me, at that point, I kind of hit that level, like, I'm not going back. I'm done. But the community negotiated something, and then we got out. We drilled a water well. We give it to a kid. And then, like, we put it in a water bottle, and then we gave it to the kid. And one of the kids was like, hey, is this how you guys, like, what was it, bottled water? I was like, what does he mean by this is how we bottled water? I was on the plane on the way back. And I thought about it. That's the first time that kid saw, like, that thing other than rain and stuff like that, because they're going to the river and they're going to the pond all the time. And then it helped me, like, it helped reinforce why I was in that thing. It's no longer a project for me. I wanted to run an organization. I wanted to help more people. So, and I was ready to condemn a community based on three police officers' actions. So I honestly learned something about myself as well. So that's the organization, I guess, backstory on, like, that was in 2011. Right now is 2022. We've helped over 22,000 people. We're hoping to build our capacity over the next 5 years to hopefully help thousands of more people. So that's where the organization stands currently.
Is saying 22,000 people in 10 years? Yeah, that's absolutely, that's a round of applause. Nice work. From halfway across the world, right? Like, and we were talking about this as well in preparation. Talk to me about the value or what you found building Aqua Africa in Omaha, in a city like Omaha, right? A community, you know, the support that you were able to garner quickly. But how's that experience been?
Honestly, like, when I say we helped over 22,000 people and a lot of people clap and give me adulation, I'm like, great, keep it coming. But that's not the honest truth of what happened in terms of building our construction. Without the people in Omaha, without the support that we've gotten in terms of financially, like, and in terms of, like, capacity-wise, we wouldn't have been able to do it. In 2015, we were approached by Lampert & Nearson, then President Mike McMeekin. And Mike McMeekin was talking to us about, hey, you know, your hand pump wells, you're serving 250 people to 500 people. We could help construct a water system. You're gonna be able to serve 2,500 to 5,000 people. I'm like, Mike, what do you know about South Sudan? He's like, well, close to nothing, but that has nothing to do with engineering. So I was like, yeah, that's not gonna work out. And Mike was persistent. And so I was like, well, we can't do the geophysical work and everything else you need us to do in South Sudan. He said, well, don't worry about most of that. We have Google Earth. We'll figure it out, you know. And in 2015, we constructed our first water system that's, as of now, still serving 5,000 people a day. And we transitioned from hand pump wells to water system. That's just a quick example of how Omaha has been able to help our small organization make a magnificent impact just, you know, across the world. And people are doing it. I mean, a lot of the people here, they're not from South Sudan. So the fact that they care about humanity in that manner says a lot about the city and says a lot about the state that we live in. So
that's good. What would you say to kind of a young change maker, a young creative, the next buoy, right, that's in the community? What kind of words of wisdom would you bestow on them, right, who want to change whether the city, the community in which they live, right, or like you've done somewhere across the world?
Yeah, well, you're throwing a lot of words that's making me even more nervous. So
questions.
No, I mean, for anybody that's interested in, like I said, if you're running an enterprise, you're running a nonprofit, whatever you're doing, make sure you're passionate about it. Because there's going to be a lot of pain, there's going to be a lot of challenges, and there's going to be a lot of late nights. So whatever you're getting into, it is going to be rough. But if you're passionate about it and you truly think you're going to change people's lives, you keep at it. Because ultimately, if you, like, whatever you do it 100% and you try to help and it doesn't work out, you at least gave it an attempt. The saddest part is when you know you didn't give it 100%. And then you're like, well, those people aren't help, and I feel terrible. Everybody loses. So you don't want to get to that point either. So
fair. That's good. Questions from the audience as well. We can definitely, any questions at this point? All right, good. We'll keep going. Question I have, kind of what's next? So 22,000 people to date, right? Kind of what are the things that that you're focused on? You know, obviously fundraising, building capacity, scaling or growing the organization, but are there specific kind of initiatives or projects that you're working on in the short term to kind of...
Yeah, so our organization, I mean, 22,000 people, that may sound like a lot, it's not, honestly. So for an NGO, not, like non-governmental organization working in the WASH space, it's not that many people that we've helped. And we realize that, you know? So for me and my team, over the next 5 years, what we've discussed is how much capacity do we need to build to scale up our efforts. So it's no longer, so 22,000 people, honestly, we want that to be a yearly thing where we're helping that many people. We also like, but we also understand we have to be a little bit more innovative in terms of how we provide our services. So we're doing, you know, in the WASH space, water and hygiene and sanitation, of course, but we're also going into energy because our water system not only does, like, for the pump, to pump the water into the holding tank, it needs an array of solar panels. What Lampert Neerson helped us understand, and also another energy firm from Jackson Hole, is that like over half of our energy could be used by the local municipalities. Now, we can't send that to residential areas. It's a lot more complex and a lot more expensive, a lot more maintenance, but for right now, that's a small step. So in order to move towards like those stages, we need to build up our capacity, we need to build up our technical capabilities, and once we get there, we're able to scale and then affect a lot more people.
What how have you found kind of working with teams on the ground, being distributed workforce, right? We just went through a global pandemic where we essentially were all a distributed workforce, right? But you've been doing this for years and years and years, right? Maybe talk to us about like that process, right? Time zone changes, just, you know, war and unrest, right, in the countries in which you're working. Like, I don't know, how has that been, I guess, you know, shed some light for those individuals, including myself, right, that haven't been in that situation. Just the amount of things that you have to go through on a daily basis to build and scale and grow your organization to meet the need of that many people is phenomenal, right? And so it's like, yeah, what does that look like on a daily basis, though?
You know, and whenever you talk about East Africa, whenever you talk about developing countries, it sounds like, it's just dominated by the negative components of what's going on there. So any challenge I put forward will be perceived as, that place is terrible, no one should go there, can't believe you're trying to help out those people who don't need help. To me, South Sudan, for example, we became an independent state in 2011. You know, once the United States became an independent state and then went into a civil war, how many years passed on? South Sudan went back to the civil war in 2013 after becoming an independent state in 2011, and everybody was like, I can't believe that happens. It happens to any nation that declares independence from another nation. So the reason why I say that, I want to preface by what I'm saying, it's really challenging to work in East Africa. It's really challenging to work in South Sudan, because the institutions required, the government required, haven't appropriately developed to where they need to be. That's going to take time. With that being said, it's very challenging. So especially now, inflation has gone up. Our supply line comes from Uganda, in Nairobi, where we source our towers. Our solar panels come from China. Like, so right as you're having these inflationary like pressures, we're using the US dollars. We're using local forces that use the South Sudanese pounds. So it's really challenging. So the way we work is quite simply, you invest in the people that you work with. If you have capable people that are doing great work, you have great results. So, and that takes a lot of time to develop your team.
Absolutely. And so you've got, so talk to me about the team as well. So yourself here in the Mastercraft building we talked about, and you've got people that you work with here, but what does the team look like across the board?
Yeah, the majority of our workforce is in the SS, in South Sudan, not the Third Reich. So in in South Sudan is the major workforce. Like, we have about 8 of our people there. There's 2 of us here, and a lot of that is strategic planning, coordination, and then partnerships with these technical firms. We're missing a lot of technical people in South Sudan. Like I said, it just hasn't developed enough yet. So it's usually 4 a.m. meetings, and then, you know, go to bed around 6, wake back up, run operations here, and then do that throughout the day is usually how it works. But the majority of our workforce are in South Sudan.
That's amazing. Well, you're doing an amazing job, and I think everyone here can testament to that as well. Talk to me, dive back into Omaha a little bit. The impact that the immigrant community has had here on the city and the community, right? We talked about, you know, again, you coming to America, right, and being an American, an African-American, but also just the rich history, culture, and contributions, I think, of what the immigrant community has done here in our city and our community.
Riff on that
for a bit, if you would.
I mean, first of all, some of my closest friends are immigrants in this in the city, and they're making great impacts in the city. I mean, 93,000 people or the workforce are immigrants. That's 9% of Nebraska are immigrant workers here. Contributing over what, $630 million, $300 million in local taxes. So the impact of immigrants in this state aren't lost on anybody. I think it's pretty clear. What is lost, I mean, like our economic impact and everything else, I think is clear. You could quantify that. But what's lost is in the cultural contributions that we provide as immigrants to this country. If you've gone to the Ethiopian restaurant, if you've gone to Starbucks and ordered an Ethiopian coffee, you know, like that wasn't invented here, you know. So it's just, right. I mean, the more, I think the melting pot is great. It's great, but melting pot doesn't just mean we assimilate completely into America's culture. It's both of them come together to create a greater culture. And that continues to happen, I feel like. And that's the contribution that's not really seen by immigrants here. I mean, or by like natural, however you want to define them, that are like, so my son is no longer an immigrant. Me and my wife are immigrants. So, but he's no longer an immigrant, but yeah.
What have you seen, I guess, strengths of what you just talked on a little bit, strengths, but also ways that we can change our community, Omaha, right, as a whole, like things that come to mind of ways that we can push greater awareness, yeah. Raise the bar, right?
Well, there's, I mean, I'll tell you the basic one, support immigrant businesses. Immigrant businesses are, it's crazy. When I was kind of looking at the research in this, I saw 7,000 self-employed businesses here in Nebraska are immigrant owned. So that was crazy to me. I honestly didn't know that. So doing that, that's good. The other thing I would like recommend for anybody that's here, go to immigrant events. Mm. I know being the only like non-African or non like Chinese, whatever it is, you feel awkward. That's how we feel being here too. So deal with it. And then just go to these events. It means a lot to the event, not just the money that's brought in, but the things you take back and talk to other people. So whenever you see those things come up, I know like people are shy about that kind of stuff, but I really encourage you to go check it out.
That's good. That's good. What? How can we support you as a community? Millwork Commons, the people that are here today, as well as, like I said, the folks that are listening on the podcast, ways that we can support
Donate to my organization, obviously.
Website?
That's
good.
So, in it, like, as an executive director, I have to bring out the money aspect first.
Absolutely.
Beyond that, though, I mean, volunteering for our organization, showing up to these kind of events just to hear our mission and our story, it's a huge amount of support. And any volunteer opportunities that you see, like in these events that I'm talking about, there's always volunteer opportunities that you could get involved in. So I really encourage you to not just take yourself and friends and family as well.
That's okay. Oh, yeah, website. Ways that people, for the podcast listeners
See,
as well.
That's another support. Telling the immigrants, like, you forgot something.
Yes. No.
Our website is www.aqua-africa.org. The dash is important. If you don't put the dash, it takes you to a South African, like, diving company. So we don't want you donating to that. They're good.
And then on the other social media as most likely. Start at the website, and I'm sure.
Yeah, aqua-africa.org.
Perfect.
And our social media is, I think, Aqua Africa, at Aqua Africa on Instagram.
We can link
You're exposing my age here.
You're fine. I know, right? TikTok, Snapchat.
I don't know about those.
Right.
Just Facebook and Instagram is the only two that I kind of know. So.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Questions from the audience. I know we've got your story is got one right up front here. I'll repeat it. Or yeah, go ahead. No, you're good.
I was really interested in what you said about like staying in the community and the sustained impact that your organization has, where like instead of just building the well, you continue over like, you know, a process of years to make ensure that it becomes sustainable. And I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit more to like what that looks like and what that means.
Great question.
Just to clarify, like our impact here in the community or staying in those communities we work in South Sudan? Yeah, so part of our program that we do in South Sudan, we call micro-democracy, and it is basically we help elect members of committees, and then those committees are handed over the water system, and then they run it. So the reason why it's sustainable, so it's just like TV. If I've never seen TV before, and then you're threatened to take it away from me, it means nothing to me. But now, I've been seeing it for as long time, you know, and then you're like, well, no more TV for the rest of your life. That's a hard call for me, you know? The same thing with, like, access to basic necessities. Power, I mean, one of the things we got to think is, like, we're human beings everywhere. So if we have access to these basic necessities in South Sudan, power, clean water, and things like that, at some point, there's a value that we're willing to pay for them. And then once that value kicks in, it's either I pay somebody or I demand my government provides those systems. Imagine if we're in the middle of Nebraska and there's no power, water, or anything like that. It's just unacceptable. So that's what we want South Sudanese living in the rural communities to say. Having no power, having no water, having no electricity is unacceptable. And once they do that, they either pay for it or they demand it from their government, and then it becomes a sustainable thing for us. That answer your question? Okay.
Great question. Well, Bua, I've got one in back. Go ahead, yeah. Biggest single bottleneck?
Oh, well, currently or like overall? Okay. The most pressing right now is, sourcing materials. So inflation is hitting us really hard. Transporting our materials is really hard. We have a project we estimated at $320,000. Now it's at $450,000 just because, like, trying to get the materials is that difficult. So, but overall, it's talent, you know. South Sudan hasn't had enough time to develop enough talent, so we have to get outside talent. Our outside talent, local people don't want them. Obviously, they want their jobs, so talent is the big issue for us. Like, that's been a continuous challenge for our organization. Yeah. So, local countries, neighboring countries, right? Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia. So my mother is Ethiopian, and so it makes it easier for me to work with other Ethiopian technicians. And fortunately for us, they have lots of Ethiopian technical people because they've been a country a lot longer. Fun fact, Ethiopia is the only country in South or in Africa that's never been colonized. So they're really developed. I don't know if there's a correlation there or take it how you want it.
good question. Well, question on the side. So you've impacted 22,000 people here.
Yeah.
Is there any organization on a more regional, national scale that's done it at a larger scale?
You know, that's, I promised I didn't coach him on that, but that's a great question. So that's a wonderful question. So one of the, like, this actually brings me back to how important Omaha is. There is an anonymous donor here in Omaha that connected us with an organization out of Denver, Colorado, called Water for People. Water for People is, I mean, they just got a grant of $50 million from, Mackenzie Scott. So they're a huge organization, and I really love their model. The anonymous donor connected us to this organization. Now the organization is helping us scale our efforts. So Water for People is doing like an extraordinary job, and we kind of follow them closely on how they do things. We've been really privileged to be working closely with them on their forever model that they have going on. So Water for People is a good one. I just like to throw out a few more that I think are impactful. Obviously, you know of water.org. I don't know that deeply about their functionality and their involvement in South Sudan. I just know a lot of South Sudanese organizations. So the other one I think to look at is Water for South Sudan. It's a really great organization. We've worked with them closely. So they're doing great work on a larger scale. So, and they're direct implementers. So great.
Good question.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I see, whenever you provide the basic necessities, once those problems are solved, other problems come. So agriculture is the big issue for South Sudan. But that for our organization, that we understand the space that we can work in, but more importantly, we understand that other space, other organizations are much better at. So that was my earlier mistake as an executive director, is I started going into agriculture a little bit because I thought there were funding opportunities in that realm. And that mission creep was a huge mistake on my part, and I led my team on the wrong way. So I had to correct that. So I think focusing on the mission and what your organization is doing is great. But to your point, it's also important to understand what other needs arise as well. So,
question. Well, Bowie, I want to thank you for your time. You're an absolute inspiration to me, and Omaha is so fortunate to have you in our community doing the work you're doing here as well as around the world. So thank you, and I appreciate your time. And let's give a round of applause for Bowie and his work.
Thank you for joining our conversation today. Join us in person the third Wednesday of the month in Millwork Commons for Millwork Conversations presented by Google.